Chapter 58 of Business for Information. Say, Plornish, though 6 weeks in arrear to my proprietor, declines. Say, Mrs. Plornish declines. Say, both refer to Mr. Clennam. Put the case. Apostrophe well? Apostrophe apostrophe well, sir, apostrophe returned Panks. Say, I come to him. Say, here I am. Apostrophe, with those prongs of hair sticking up all over his head, and his breath coming and going very hard and short, the busy Panks fell back a step in tug metaphor, took half a turn astern, as if to show his dingy hull complete, then forged ahead again, and directed his quick glance by turns into his hat, where his notebook was, and into Clennam's face. Mr. Panks, not to trespass on your grounds of mystery, I will be as plain with you as I can. Let me ask two questions. First apostrophe, all right. Apostrophe apostrophe said Panks, holding up his dirty forefinger with his broken nail. I see. What's your motive?
Apostrophe, exactly.
Apostrophe, motive, apostrophe said Panks, good. Nothing to do with my proprietor. Not stateable at present, ridiculous to state at present, but good. Desiring to serve young person, name of Dorrit, apostrophe said Panks, with his forefinger still up as a caution. Better admit motive to be good. Apostrophe, secondly, and lastly, what do you want to know? Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Panks fished up his notebook before the question was put, and buttoning it with care in an inner breast pocket, and looking straight at Clennam all the time, replied with a pause and a puff, I want supplementary information of any sort. Apostrophe, Clennam could not withhold a smile, as the panting little steam tug, so useful to that unwieldy ship, the Casby, waited on and watched him, as if it were seeking an opportunity of running in and rifling him of all he wanted, before he could resist its maneuvers. Though there was that in Mr. Panks' eagerness too, which awakened many wondering speculations in his mind. After a little consideration, he resolved to supply Mr. Panks with such leading information as it was in his power to impart him, well knowing that Mr. Panks, if he failed in his present research, was pretty sure to find other means of getting it. He, therefore, first requesting Mr. Panks to remember his voluntary declaration that his proprietor had no part in the disclosure, and that his own intentions were good, two declarations which that coaly little gentleman with the greatest ardor repeated, openly told him that, as to the Dorrit lineage or former place of habitation, he had no information to communicate, and that his knowledge of the family did not extend beyond the fact that it appeared to be now reduced to 5 members. Namely, to 2 brothers, of whom one was single, and one a widower with 3 children. The ages of the whole family he made known to Mr. Panks, as nearly as he could guess at them, and finally he described to him the position of the father of the Marshalsea, and the course of time and events through which he had become invested with that character. To all this, Mr. Panks, snorting, and blowing in a more and more portentous manner as he became more interested, listened with great attention, appearing to derive the most agreeable sensations from the painfulest parts of the narrative, and particularly to be quite charmed by the account of William Dorrit's long imprisonment. In conclusion, Mr. Panks, apostrophe said Arthur, I have but to say this. I have reasons beyond a personal regard for speaking as little as I can of the Dorrit family, particularly at my mother's house, Mr. Panks nodded, and for knowing as much as I can. So devoted a man of business as you are, eh? Apostrophe apostrophe, for Mr. Panks had suddenly made that blowing effort with unusual force. It's nothing, apostrophe said Panks. So devoted a man of business as yourself has a perfect understanding of a fair bargain. I wish to make a fair bargain with you, that you shall enlighten me concerning the Dorrit family, when you have it in your power, as I have enlightened you. It may not give you a very flattering idea of my business habits, that I failed to make my terms beforehand, apostrophe continued Clennam.
but I prefer to make them a point of honor. I have seen so much business done on sharp principles that, to tell you the truth, Mr. Panks, I am tired of them. Apostrophe, Mr. Panks laughed. It's a bargain, sir, apostrophe said he. You shall find me stick to it. Apostrophe, after that, he stood a little while looking at Clennam, and biting his 10 nails all round, evidently while he fixed in his mind what he had been told, and went over it carefully, before the means of supplying a gap in his memory should be no longer at hand. It's all right, apostrophe he said at last, and now I'll wish you good day, as it's collecting day in the yard. By the by, though, a lame foreigner with a stick. Apostrophe a. You do take a reference sometimes, I see. Apostrophe said Clennam. When he can pay, sir, apostrophe replied Panks. Take all you can get, and keep back all you can't be forced to give up. That's business. The lame foreigner with the stick wants a top room down the yard. Is he good for it? Apostrophe, I am, apostrophe said Clennam, and I will answer for him. Apostrophe, that's enough. What I must have of bleeding heart yard, apostrophe said Panks, making a note of the case in his book, is my bond. I want my bond, you see. Pay up, or produce your property. That's the watchword down the yard. The lame foreigner with the stick represented that you sent him, but he could represent, as far as that goes, that the great mogul sent him. He has been in the hospital, I believe. Apostrophe, yes. Through having met with an accident. He is only just now discharged. Apostrophe, it's pauperizing a man, sir, I have been shown, to let him into a hospital. Apostrophe said Panks. And again blew off that remarkable sound. I have been shown so too, apostrophe said Clennam, coldly. Mr. Panks, being by that time quite ready for a start, got under steam in a moment, and, without any other signal or ceremony, was snorting down the step ladder and working into Bleeding Heart Yard, before he seemed to be well out of the counting house. Throughout the remainder of the day, Bleeding Heart Yard was in consternation, as the grim Panks cruised in it, haranguing the inhabitants on their backslidings in respect of payment, demanding his bond, breathing notices to quit and executions, running down defaulters, sending a swell of terror on before him, and leaving it in his wake. Knots of people, impelled by a fatal attraction, lurked outside any house in which he was known to be, listening for fragments of his discourses to the inmates, and, when he was rumored to be coming down the stairs, often could not disperse so quickly, but that he would be prematurely in among them, demanding their own arrears, and rooting them to the spot. Throughout the remainder of the day, Mr. Panks, what were they up to? And what did they mean by it? Sounded all over the yard. Mr. Panks wouldn't hear of excuses, wouldn't hear of complaints, wouldn't hear of repairs, wouldn't hear of anything but unconditional money down. Perspiring and puffing and darting about in eccentric directions, and becoming odder and dingier every moment, he lashed the tide of the yard into a most agitated and turbid state. It had not settled down into calm water again full 2 hours, after he had been seen fuming away on the horizon at the top of the steps. There were several small assemblages of the bleeding hearts at the popular points of meeting in the yard that night, among whom it was universally agreed that Mr. Panks was a hard man to have to do with, and that it was much to be regretted, so it was, that a gentleman like Mr. Casby should put his rents in his hands, and never know him in his true light. For, said the bleeding hearts, if a gentleman with that head of hair and them eyes took his rents into his own hands, ma'am, there would be none of this wording and wearing, and things would be very different. At which identical evening hour and minute, the patriarch who had floated serenely through the yard in the forenoon before the harrying began, with the express design of getting up this trustfulness in his shining bumps and silken locks, at which identical hour and minute, that first-rate humbug of 1,000 guns was heavily floundering in the little dock of his exhausted tug at home, and was saying, as he turned his thumbs, "A very bad day's work, Panks, very bad day's work. It seems to me, sir, and I must insist on making this observation forcibly in justice to myself, that you ought to have got much more money." Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.